Voice of Florida Architecture. I'm your host, Rhonda Hammond, AIA. We have a very special guest with us today, AIA Florida's Executive Vice President, Becky Magdaleno, Honorary AIA. Welcome, Becky, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Rhonda. I'm very excited to be here, and I'm very honored that you asked me to be part of the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. You're the leader of the AIA Florida Association, and we have so much to delve into in your role as EVP, but I want to start with the professional journey that brought you to AIA Florida. And I'm certain most of our membership, our executive board included, are not aware of the gamut of your experience and credentials. So tell us about the experience that prepared you to play such an integral role at AIA Florida.
Well, after hearing everybody's journey to architecture, I guess this is my origin story.
Exactly.
FSU brought me to Tallahassee, so that's where I went to school. And during my senior year, I got an internship at the Capitol. I was majoring in political science and humanities, so I was doing two very different majors. So I got an internship in the Senate, the Florida Senate. That ended up turning into a job. And my first election after I graduated and was the 2000 election, which if those of you that were in Florida in 2000 would remember, that's Bush v. Gore, where Tallahassee and our state became the center of the universe for a long time. So that was a very interesting time. I remember my parents came to visit. I took them over to the Capitol and showed them where all the media was camped out. And for those of you that were in Tallahassee at the time, if you didn't get a chance to see it, literally in the courtyard, there was electrical tape on the grounds, and it would say CNN or whoever gets to go their little spot. So I stayed in politics for several years. I even worked on a gubernatorial campaign. And then later, that contacts in that same internship got me my first job in the association world with the Florida Bankers Association, where I was their vice president of membership. So that one internship that was only 6 months, it was my last semester of college, just that networking and the relationships that you establish there turned into a couple of jobs. And with that association experience, I was able to come over to AI Florida. So it's been quite the journey.
So if I'm not mistaken, you during that time was when you registered as a lobbyist, or did you do that after you came to AIA Florida?
No, I only registered now as a lobbyist for AIA Florida. I was on the fundraising side, so I wasn't really doing with my political experience, I was more on the fundraising side. So all the rules we have to follow with FAPAC and those other things, I already knew those inside out before coming here. So that was more of where I was. It wasn't more with policy, it was more with campaigns and the fundraising side of things.
So an EVP, you're part of a national organization known as CASE. What is CASE and how does it benefit you and the association?
So CASE is a network within AIA. It's the Council of Architectural Component Executives. So it's my colleagues across the nation from the 200 plus chapters that we have, ranging from large states like Florida to smaller local components. So whoever has a staff person, they are part of CASE. It is quite a robust network, and I am very happy to have it. These people are my colleagues, but they're also my friends. They are the person I email when I'm like, hey, have you guys had this problem? I don't know what to do with it. I'm able to bounce off ideas of just not AIA things, general association issues. If there's an HR issue or something that you need someone to bounce ideas off of, it is wonderful to have that network and the years of experience that some of these people have, decades of experience working for AIA. They have the same drive. They want to move this association forward. They want to make AIA the best it can be for members. It's just great to have that network of support.
You've also represented Florida at the national level. Tell us about those positions.
Yes, correct. I did serve on the CASE Executive Committee. So CASE does have its own board or executive committee that does work with AI national staff. So I served on that for several years and ultimately served as CASE president in 2019. And as that role with CASE president, I served on the National Strategic Council 2019 and then moved to the board in 2020, the national board. That was a great experience to be able to represent Florida, to represent CASE. I was there as the CASE representative to really represent the components and component staff. But it was great to have, you know, Florida have a voice at the table too. 2020 was quite the strange year to be on the board. Started out great. I got my itinerary of where we would be going in 2020, and all ended up on Zoom. But it did show. I was also able to be on the board at a time when it was important to National and for CASE to support our components and to make sure our members and components got through this. If you recall, when COVID first started, nobody had any idea what was going to happen. We didn't know if there'd be a huge recession, people were going to lose their jobs. Was this going to be worse than what happened in 2008, where we, would all our members quit? So there was a lot to prepare for. And I was very happy to be able to be named to some national task forces that Jane Frederick was president at the time, that she had set up, because the priority was, let's help our members and our components and our association get through this tough time. And as Florida, as AIA Florida, we were able to quickly pivot, turn our continuing education to be online. And this is, when not everybody was used to Zoom or GoToMeeting. And April of 2020, we ended up having a webinar for 700 people across the nation. So thank you
Wow.
to staff and everybody that we were able to do that. You kept AI Florida in a great financial position. It's benefited. I appreciate all that leadership did to get us through that tough time and keep our association moving.
In February of 2023, at the National Leadership Summit, I was there and witnessed the pinning for your honorary AIA designation. Tell the listeners what it was like for you. What did that mean for you?
Well, that meant a lot. It was a culmination of a lot of work. You have to be a staff member for AIA for at least 10 years. And that could be through different components or at one component. But of course, my 10 years were all with AIA Florida. So as soon as I was eligible, I applied, asked a lot of people for recommendation letters. It was humbling to see all the stuff we've accomplished in that 10 years. I liken it to, I've not had the experience of applying for fellowship, but I believe this will probably be the closest I ever get. So compiling things throughout the year, getting my little electronic file of every time we did something, but it was very nice to see that all put together. And it's not work to further me, but to further AI Florida. And it was great to see that all in one place. And it was quite the honor to have you, Mickey Jacob, and others there to witness that and to be a part of it, because I wouldn't get it without what the volunteer leaders do. So I'm just helping move your association along.
Well, when I got involved with the local AIA Tallahassee component, one of the first pieces of advice I received was, if you don't know Becky, you need to get to know her. I was told that that whatever I would need, or if there were any questions I might have about being in a leadership position in AIA, that you were the go-to. And I have to say, after several years now, I've not received a better piece of advice. And I'm certain that there are members from all the other 12 components that would testify to the same. Some of our listeners may not know that you served for many years prior to becoming our EVP. Tell us about your previous role and how long did you serve in that role?
Well, I'm glad I could live up to what you were told. I started with AI Florida in 2011. I came on as the director of administration, which I quickly learned that that title was ambiguous by design. So that was more of all other responsibilities as necessary that everybody includes with their job description. Then I moved up to chief operating officer, and this was all under Vicky Long while she was executive vice president. And I must thank her for all the opportunities she gave me and encouraged me to serve on CASE and encouraged me to do more. So I am grateful to her. And then she announced her retirement after 17 years with the organization. So I had to go through the same procedure that everybody else did. There was no special treatment. We do for our members, we do at AI Florida have a transition policy and do have a plan in place. So as soon as Vicky said she's retiring, the wheels went into motion, and I got my resume together. And I had to go through the interview process just like other people, and other people were interviewed for this position. So we did have that transition policy in place, and just having now I've just marked my 13-year anniversary, and having all that institutional knowledge, I do think that gave me an edge. So and it's been, as far as I can tell, a smooth transition, and that is a hard transition for an association to make. to get a new CEO, a new chief staff officer, chief staff executive is quite the transition. Can be rough sometimes, but I hope our members haven't seen anything different, and if anything, hopefully an improvement in their member services. So yeah, AIA Florida is stronger than ever.
I agree. So the AIA Florida president at the time that hired you during that process, Ignacio Reyes, FAIA, he shared that when you walked into the room for your interview that you owned it. And he said that you were prepared, you were ready, you shared your vision, and I would have loved to have been there to see that. You know, you had a lot of support from the components around the state for your candidacy. Sometimes we felt like we were going to hold a revolution, so to speak, because everybody was so supportive of your candidacy. So it's great that, like you say, it was institutional knowledge, and it just makes for a smooth transition, and then it just runs the team. I'm going to let you talk about the staff and the team and
Okay.
how well they run together. But before we get into the specifics of your role as VAP, tell us, who is AIA Florida?
Well, we can go back to our mission week and the name title of this podcast. We are the voice of Florida architecture. We are the only association representing architects and architecture before the Florida legislature, before state regulatory boards. And that's where your licensure, that's where those decisions are made about your licensure, your right to practice, who gets to do what within Florida, your scope of practice, how many continuing education credits you need, and what courses you need. That's all done at the state level. So it is this organization that is representing you before the regulatory board, fighting for your right to have a, to remain licensed and not have other people encroach on what an architect can do, and even to the point of defending the title of architect. As many of our listeners will know, a few years ago that was under attack. We had somebody that was not licensed in Florida claiming First Amendment rights to use the term architect. And it was AIA Florida. It was our legal team at Gray Robinson working with the Board of Architecture and Interior Design and filing an amicus brief and using what influence and contacts we had to say, no, you have to be licensed and educated to be, call yourself an architect. Not anyone can just say, I'm an architect. Not everyone knows what we do every day, but we are the organization out there guarding the practice of architecture.
Can you talk to us about FAPAC?
Sure. FAPAC is the Florida Architects Political Action Committee. So it is a separate organization from AIA Florida, but it is related. So it is a political action committee or political committee filed with the Florida Division of Elections. But this is our vehicle to take in contributions from individuals, corporations. We follow Florida state campaign finance laws and not federal campaign finance laws. And we use that money to give to legislative candidates for the state legislature that are in support of our issues. There is a board, and each component does have a representative on all 13 local components have a representative on that FAPAC board because we do want that local intel of which candidates we should be supporting. And this helps us establish relationships with these lawmakers as they're running for office. We had a, I believe our 99% success rate. We only had two candidates of the all the candidates we supported last this last election cycle that just ended in November, and both those went to recounts. So we barely lost those two, but so we had like a 99% success rate. So we already have before session starts, we have already had that those conversations. We try to make those check deliveries local. This year's hurricane season wasn't so kind to us to get all those done, but we do want to make sure that it's constituents, it's architects who are constituents, establishing those relationships and letting their lawmakers know, our lawmakers know that you guys are a resource, that it's not just blueprints, but anything you need an architect for, we are here and we can give you that information and help you as you make these decisions on broad array of issues that a lawmaker is supposed to be an expert in all of them during the 60 days of session.
We also have another on the Florida Foundation. Talk to us about its purpose.
Sure. The Florida Foundation for Architecture is our charitable arm. So this is a 501c3 with the IRS. This is akin to, any other charitable organization that you can make a tax deductible contribution too. That's how it's structured with the IRS and registered with the state of Florida to take contributions. But if this is more the forward facing, this is promoting architecture outside of architects. So things like the architecture and education, building the next generation, getting into elementary schools and beyond to encourage kids to choose the path to become an architect, or even if they don't, at least educating them on what an architect does. So hopefully they're future clients. This also does the People's Choice Award. So this is our annual competition to show the public the great work that Florida architects are doing in these projects across Florida and get the public to vote on their favorite. So it's a very fun competition, but it does help educate the public about the importance of architecture and the impact of architecture on their local communities.
It is a fun, and it usually is themed close to what our convention theme is, so it makes it even more fun every year.
And I do have to add, the one thing that we have done with the foundation in the past year is we have revamped and reestablished our scholarship to help architecture students afford to complete school. I think it's been dormant for about 20 years or so, but we brought it back last year, and we had more applications than anticipated, but we were able to award several scholarships. They even many of the recipients came to our design awards at convention this past summer in Palm Beach, and it was great to see the next generation of architects and future AI Florida members.
So talk about how the governing body is organized.
We do have a board of directors. We have 24 members, and that includes each local component having a state director. So there is a direct liaison between local components and state. The officers, which are the vice president, president-elect, and we do have four vice presidents that each get assigned to a committee. We have two associate directors. Those are all elected at our annual meeting at convention. And then the local components get to choose their delegates, and the delegates vote and choose those officers. So meet at least quarterly in person, if not more. But this is the body making decisions, setting the path with the strategic plan. We just got back from our strategic planning retreat and are implementing a new plan for the next 3 years. And this is also the governing body that has the fiduciary duty to use our member dues wisely and protect our resources, whether it be volunteer hours, of course, making sure we're financially stable and making the right financial decisions, and even, utilizing staff the way we should be and making sure that what we're doing is providing the highest return on investment of member dues.
Very good. So AI Florida is part of a group called Large State. Tell us what that's about.
So the large states are kind of just what that sounds like. It's the states that have the largest membership. And right now, it's about the top 10 largest states, and they get together and meet. We have a lot of commonalities, especially when it comes to advocacy. We're seeing a lot of the same issues in within our state legislatures and how we prepare for that. Of the large states, I believe Florida is number five now with membership. I think it's New York, California, Texas, Illinois, then us. May have that in the wrong order, but there we are. So we do have a good amount of membership and wield some power within the AIA network. And when the large states get together, we do have an annual meeting where the presidents and presidents-elect from all the large state chapters get together and have work together on similar issues, and we can have an impact. And it helps pool resources. I don't have to replicate something. If, in California this program has worked, then that's something I can do here. We've even worked with New York State when they were already doing SAP training. It helps us work together, and then we reciprocate when there are Florida licensed architects living in New York that they come take our Advanced Florida Building Code course. So there's a lot of ways we can work together. So we are using all of our resources, no matter what state it is, wisely.
That is a great resource. So tell us where AI Florida is with regard to membership in relation to the state licensed member.
Sure. We have about 4,400 members now. That includes our associate members and those are that are on the path to licensure. There are now almost there are about 12,000 licensed architects in Florida, but and we that has grown. That's about more than 900 than this time last year. But that's not all just people living and working in Florida, going to architecture school in Florida and then setting up shop here. So more than half of licensees don't live in Florida. They obviously get a license to work on a project here. So about 46% of those licensees actually live in Florida and are eligible for membership. So we are at about a 55% market share right now. And that has stayed steady and it has gone up just a little bit. There were years where we were below 50, so I'm happy that we have stayed. Our average over the past 12 years has been about 54, 55. So happy to report that. I would love to see that go higher. So we will keep working on getting those architects that aren't members because they are benefiting from what we're doing, especially advocacy-wise. So I would love to see them all as members and realize some of the benefits you get, like your transcript, where you don't have to keep track of your credits yourself. Let AIA do that for you.
Yeah, I personally have taken advantage of that benefit for sure. AIA Florida has a long, robust history setting the bar for association excellence, financial stewardship, collaborating for its local component success, and organizing conventions that are the envy of the nation. You're the Executive Vice President of AIA Florida, just celebrating your third year. As you took the helm of what Tell us what were the goals and the vision you'd set for the association.
I wanted members to be proud of being a member. I wanted people to want to be a member. Obviously, the board and the membership sets our path, and with the strategic plan is setting our goals and where we need to be. And I want to get you where you want to be. I've been happy to see I get this much more community feeling at our events. And I am very much happy to see how architects from all parts of the state or even within the same town work together. There doesn't seem to be this, there seems to be a lot of camaraderie, and I'm very happy to see that. And even just every year at convention, you see people that's their one time a year they see their friends from other sides of the state. And I'm very happy to see that it really is a network. It is a group of professionals working together. Anytime there's an issue where AI Florida takes a stand or where architects want to have a say in it, it's always for the betterment of the community, of our state, of how it affects protecting the health, safety, welfare. That is truly what you're licensed for and seems to be what drives all decisions. It's, how we're designing to mitigate for hurricanes, how we're getting people back in their homes after disasters. It's the feeling you get when you walk in a building. It's the experience, it's that human experience. You guys are always thinking about that wherever you go and whatever you do, and it's always for the betterment. It's never for your personal gain. It's always for the betterment of others.
So, in fulfilling our mission, we continually seek to provide value to our membership. How do you, as EVP, and your staff provide value?
Well, we'd like to be your number one choice for continuing education as you always fulfill your requirements for your license. And we want to provide you continuing education that you want. The speakers and the skills and those tangible things you can take back to the office as soon as you leave convention or disconnect from our webinar, you've already learned something that you could put into practice. We want to be that. Obviously, with advocacy, we want to protect your right to practice architecture and make sure that you can have a successful and profitable business within Florida and continue to practice what you were educated and trained to do and what you're licensed to do, and somebody else isn't encroaching on what your profession is.
Tell us about your staff.
We have 7 people, including me. We are almost all based in Tallahassee, but over this past year, we have taken on Chrissy San Marvell, who many of you have seen at our conventions for years past. She's officially full time, celebrating her just about her 1 year anniversary of being full time. And we're happy to have her as our director of communications, and she's based in Boca Raton, so she also helps our local chapter there, AI Palm Beach. Wendy Johnson's our director of professional development, and she does all of our continuing education and our events, our meetings, and convention is her baby, and Jacob Leadership Institute. So we're helping to provide leadership skills to no matter where you are in your career, leadership skills that you can apply to make yourself self successful. Crystal Rollis is our membership and marketing, so she does our trade show and all our sponsors, works with our vendors, works with our associates. We do have a network of associate directors that she helps to see, and she's also our liaison to our foundation. We have George Henning. He's our manager of component relations. So he's the one that deals with a lot of the components that we help to manage. So it's not just AI Palm Beach. We have with almost the majority of our components, we have some sort of support system or mechanism for helping them, whether it's website updates or getting emails out. And George is the point person on a lot of that. Larry Crumby is our executive business manager. He does a lot of support financially, as far as making sure we're keeping our bookkeeping straight and getting checks cut and those type of things. And he makes all the appointments for legislative day, so he'll be pretty busy here within the next month or so. And Hillary Gill is our administrative assistant, and she's the voice you hear on the other side of the phone. We are happy and we are very proud that you don't have to call an 800 number, that you actually get a person on the other line. There is a live human if you're calling during business hours. And for the most part, that's Hillary, and she's always very happy to help you with anything that you need, whether it's a certificate or getting you registered for something. That's what she's there for.
So your 3 years have been action-packed. We've launched the podcast this year and the legal helpline. Tell us about that and if there's any other achievement you'd like to highlight.
Well, I am very proud that this podcast launched. This has been your vision, and the communications committee had this idea, and I'm glad to see it to fruition and actually published on podcast platforms, and hopefully we will grow our listeners. So this has come full circle to be a guest on the podcast. So also happy to announce that within this next year, in addition to these full-length episodes of the podcast, that we will be having our advocacy minute. As we move into session, this will be a quick way to keep members abreast of the very important issues that are before the Florida legislature, and whether or not we need members to answer any calls to action, or how changes within statutes and bills filed may affect you personally and professionally. So we look forward to having that in a simple way that you can listen on your car ride home to stay up to date with the Florida legislature. We did this summer launch our legal helpline that you can get in touch and get direct help from AI Florida's general counsel at Gray Robinson. Oftentimes there's just a question you have, whether it's HR related or contractual related, that you don't want to get somebody on retainer, and it maybe you only need 3 to 5 hours of legal time or something like that. So we want to help bridge that gap of you having to hire your own counsel when maybe there's just a question that we could help you with. So that is on our website. We launched it at convention this summer, so there is a direct form on our website that you can submit your question, and we'll work with legal counsel to get you an answer. And should it turn into something that's bigger, you will be advised to either hire Gray Robinson or get your own counsel for that. But hopefully this will help you through those little questions, especially for the firms that aren't big enough to have in-house counsel, which is most of our members, that AI Florida can provide that service for you.
That's a great resource. That's an incredible resource. So part of my message this year as president, I've encouraged our members to be proactive, engaging with AIA National. Explain the importance of our members participating at the national level.
Well, like I said before, it's important that AI Florida has a voice, and that it's not just me as a staff person, but making sure it's you as volunteer leaders who have been the boots on the ground from your local component all the way to the state component. And we do want to have that connection with National. I'm very happy now that for 2025 we'll have three strategic counselors. Maybe our listeners might remember that there was a governance change and the regions are gone. We used to have two people from the Florida Caribbean region go to the strategic council. Now it's gone to a state-based model. While we still keep our relationship with AI Puerto Rico and AI Virgin Islands with our awards and magazine, but now Puerto Rico has their own state director or state representative to the strategic council. And we just have one from Florida. But there are still opportunities for at-large counselors, and we have had two members take advantage of that and get voted in. So other states don't have that many people, and it's very important to have that. So thank you to Gloria Cloder and Ignacio Reyes, who have put themselves out as at-large counselors, and Stephen Panzerino, who will be just getting onto the Strategic Council. And I must extend thanks to Jeff Huber, who's concluding his term, who has been a wonderful resource, and he's doing it the other direction, coming back down to AI Florida board. So, but we are happy to have his knowledge. And then we have people serving on committees. Nato Otero is on the Contract Docs Committee, which is a 10-year term. So thank you for making that commitment and giving her knowledge. We have people on Knowledge Communities and ARCAPAC and all over the place. And it's great to have those people serving throughout the institute. So we know what's going on and we can collaborate, and we're all working together to further the organization.
So, Becky, what do you think is AIA Florida's strength? What makes us the association that we are?
I will go back to community. I think we really have a strong community of architects that are on the path to becoming an architects. I think we have helped support each other. Definitely have the singular goal of furthering architecture in whatever form that will be, whether it's protecting licensure or protecting historic structures or, making sure the Florida Building Code is actually mitigating hurricanes, is helping people. So I really think it's our community that we seem to really support each other. And I just think that's something that's to be admired.
So, are there things that we can improve on?
Well, there's always things we can improve on. So, yes, I mean, as staff, we want to make sure that we're meeting your needs, that we're meeting the members' needs, that the members are getting the most out of their membership dues. It's a financial commitment to be a member of the AIA. It's a commitment to keep you up your continuing education beyond what licensure calls for. So, I am very grateful to every single member that does this every year and commits time to even volunteer on top of just being a member. So, as staff, we want to make sure we are meeting all your needs, if not exceeding your needs as an architect or someone who is on the path to become an architect in Florida. So we always want to make sure that we are continually serving our members, and we always know that there's room for improvement for that.
And the board, the executive board, is very much online with that. And we have such a great board coming for 2025. But Becky, from your perspective, what does membership in the AIA Florida offer those that are not currently members?
Well, it helps support the organization that's protecting you, that is protecting your right to practice, that is protecting your right to be licensed. It's helping your firm, or even if you are a sole proprietor, helping you be successful, to continue to be successful in the profession that you have chosen. Even down to, we mentioned it before, having that transcript. If you are ever audited by the Board of Architecture and Interior Design, just print out that transcript or save the PDF and email it away, and you're good to go. And that's something you didn't have to worry about. We are your source for continuing education, the quality continuing education that you want to see, with the topics that you do want to learn about, whether it's personal improvement or leadership skills or technical code-related education, or even just, hearing the latest in design and technology. We want to make sure that we're covering all those different topics that architects want to hear about. And you're supporting your fellow architects, and you're supporting your association that is helping keep architecture alive and well in Florida.
So thank you, Becky, for your leadership and for your dedication to our profession, which is evident in your tireless work ethic and advocating and promoting our profession. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Rhonda. This has been a very enjoyable conversation.
I hope our listeners learned about the efforts that go into running the association, the commitment to your success as a practitioner by our EVP and her staff, and the wealth of benefits that membership in AIA Florida can offer. I welcome you to follow our podcast so that you won't miss any of the upcoming episodes. You can find us on Apple and Spotify. This is Rhonda Hammond, AIA, your host. I, along with AIA Florida's Executive Vice President and staff that have produced the Voice of Florida Architecture, thank you for listening to season one of our podcast. We hope you were encouraged as you heard how the association advocates for the profession of architecture and were inspired by the different board members and award winners as they shared their stories. We hope you'll join us for season two, scheduled to launch in January. Our first episode will feature our 2025 AIA Florida President, Elizabeth Camargo, AIA. Again, thank you for listening.